Welcome, everybody, to the next episode of YOPN's podcast. Now, vodcast. Vodcast, is that a word? Are we making that up?
Vlogcast.
Living
I like
well.
Vodcast.
It sounds very like I am a vampire. Welcome to my vodcast.
Three dimensional podcast. Yeah,
4D. Living well starts here. So. Today we are going to talk about creative outlets with Parkinson's disease. It's super common for people with Parkinson's to have some kind of creative impetus after diagnosis. I have theories as to whether it's the disease or the medication, because I definitely myself notice like where I'm at with my medication determines how creative I am. But it is something that most of us share. We're going to start talking about what our little obsessions are.
Does anyone get more creative when they're in an off period as opposed to anything else? That's my one curiosity. I'm going to disappear for a second because my computer's not plugged in.
Okay, well, you plug that in. I mean, I'll answer her question about like off or on. I honestly haven't drawn that correlation because I try to be like a train barreling forward. And what I mean by that is I've started to notice I have more extended off periods, and I try to really not lose momentum because that's happening. It's harder in most cases, but yeah. So in that context, when I think of things I'm being creative with, which I'll get into to more backstory, I really don't pay attention to off or on, but that is very interesting because I'll start thinking about that now.
Yeah. I have the same situation. I'm off more than I'm on, so it's like you kind of just have to keep going until it gets to the end.
Like you're more creative off?
I'm certainly more creative off. I'll a lot of my my Instagram posts, my long, you know, I have maxed out the characters on Instagram. And those usually come at like 3 a.m. I'll wake up and I'm off and I can't fall back to sleep. And I just get an idea in my head and I will literally like dictate into my phone whisperingly and at 3 a.m, like, like
that's
creepy.
That's
talking into my phone. It's odd. It's really odd. You see me like being like a troll in the middle of the night under the covers. Like a child.
Do you think it's due to like you, I mean, I know when I'm off and it's more frustrating and things like that. Do you think that comes into play because it's maybe a more emotional state and we're tapping into the muse easier, or we have better access that way because we're more, shit, what's the word?
Passionate? Well, levodopa scrambles me a little bit. So I don't know if it happens to a lot of people, but I get a little bit of like medicine head, almost like when you have a buzz from a drink or something. Like I get that sometimes with too much levodopa, and I'm certainly on too much, but I have to be on too much. So when that buzz kind of goes away, I can think better. Then I can think more clearly, but I don't want to do anything when I'm off because I don't want to type anything when I'm off. That's my creative outlet is writing. So, but I don't want to write when I'm off, but I do because the idea, if I don't write it down, it'll be gone. It'll disappear.
And like that, you saying you don't want to write when you're off. I can't because my both arms are just, I mean, yeah, they're doing
right.
This.
I'll text to speech.
When I'm off and it's, and the text to speech.
Yeah, I'll have to correct it.
That turns into some kind of weird word casserole after.
Autocorrect takes huge liberties with my speech when I'm not feeling well.
Maybe if we knew someone that knew someone that worked for a company that did some kind of speech recognition.
Yeah, I mean, this is a good segue into Jerry and me sharing a little bit of your backstory because I am fascinated by where you work.
Okay, well.
Yeah, actually, it's a cool job. I mean, it's like you tell people you work there, and it's like, oh wow, that's really interesting.
Well, I'll tell you a little bit about the background for that because it's a surprise for me. I work for Microsoft, and I've been a developer my whole life. And we talk about creativity. So I did. I'm always looking to sign up for studies, right? And I want to be in a study. And I selfishly would love to do it just so that I could stumble across that miracle drug that's going to cure everything and be the subject. But you know, the studies I end up getting picked for are the ones like where they take a pound of flesh out of your arm to test for Parkinson's. I'm like, okay, I guess it's for the greater cause. But it was funny because they took a test, or they gave us a test for mental, and I went through the mathematic part, and the person giving the test was like, okay, you did the math part really well, so now we got to do the creative part, and you're gonna, everyone who does really well on the analytical side always fails on, or doesn't do as well on the creative side. And that went well too, and she was very surprised. But that's sort of the backstory for what I do, because I've been a developer my whole career. The only other thing I ever wanted to be was an astronaut. So I wanted to be an astronaut until my parents brought home a computer, Commodore 64 bread box, and I started hacking away at it, and I knew I was going to be a programmer. But I've always loved reading and writing and fantasy and things like that. I have, you know, poetry that I wrote that's like fantasy poetry. When I was younger, I write rhymes. So like when you're talking about off periods in your mind, it's like I had the verse, in my steady bee, I'm gonna be, once dopamine is dopamine for me, I don't mind, you see what it does to me, but what it does to my mind is a felony. Because the off and on and the drugs and not drugs, it's very tough to sort out like who is Jeremy, right? What is a side effect of the disease? What is a side effect of the drug? And I feel like the creative outlet is something that does that. And I know I promised I'd say how I'd get to Microsoft, and I'll do that. But it's interesting because it's all going to tie together magically in a second. I used to love to write poetry, and that was when I was a really angry teenager who hated the world and was miserable, and I just wrote out angst. But I came to a very clear vision of what I felt poetry was, and I felt it was like taking a picture of an emotional state. And the things that we write are descriptive ways to bring people down a journey so that they can somehow experience what we're experiencing without being us. And that's the way I perceive that. And that's where the stuff I do today is also there. So what about Microsoft? I was working at a job, and I've done a lot of leadership roles in IT. I was a director of IT at one company. I was a built a practice at another company. I was actually very happy working with a company that hadn't done any type of software development, and they wanted to spin up a new division, and I did that. And as part of that, that company was known as a company that helped install hardware and configure servers and things like that. And so people didn't think of us as a software company. And so to change that perception, I was doing things like sponsoring user groups, speaking at user groups, going to conferences, speaking at conferences, recording videos, just creating media to make people aware of what we did. And as I was doing that, I saw this interview on Twitter. It was actually Twitter at the time. I'm dating myself. This was years ago. And in fact, I think we still had 140 character limit, but we could post videos. But two people I knew in the community were talking about this new division that had opened at Microsoft called Cloud Advocacy. And it was about connecting with developers, advocating for developers. Things they did was like, you know, produce video shows, travel to conferences all over the world, write books, write articles, support user groups. And it was the stuff that I was doing, but like for this big company, Microsoft, right? Well, guess what? Because angry youth and everything else, and I couldn't focus my mind, I dropped out of college. So I'm thinking Microsoft would never want to have anything to do with me as a college dropout. So I didn't do anything. I told my wife about it. I said, oh, there's this really cool thing. Good for them. Forgot about it. Now, I was very happy at that job. So every time I got a recruiter email, I would just throw it in the trash can and just ignore it. I wouldn't even look at it. I might glance it over. A week after I saw that, totally unconnected, or maybe it was. I don't remember if Alexa was turned on or not, or if I had listening devices, but somehow a recruiter from Microsoft pinged me out of the blue and said, "Hey, we'd like to give you this role." Now, I was naive about positions there because they have 120,000 people. There's a ton of positions. This was actually a similar position, but in a different place, and I interviewed for it, and the interview went well. But they wanted certain things that I didn't have that just, it's not my fault. It just wasn't a fit for the job. So I was like, okay, that's good. Well, then 2 weeks later, another recruiter called me from the same company, different position. So I went through that interview process. And then they hit the end of the budget year and the budget went away for the position. So I was like, okay, I have my chance. I'm fine. Third time, someone calls and says, "Hey, Jeremy, have you ever heard of cloud advocacy?" And I said, "Why, yes, I have." And so I went through and interviewed for the role. But it's interesting because I was getting to a point in my career where I was done just writing code, and I had built an actual personal mission statement. I said, "This will direct what I do, and it's to empower other developers to be their best." So that's why I was doing conferences and talks and teaching and training and everything else. And a lot of mentoring. I mean, that's why I like leadership roles, not for the power if I own the organization, but really for the opportunity to impact lives and people's lives. So I joined Microsoft as a cloud advocate, and it was as advertised. The next year after I joined, I was a diamond status medallion on Delta Airlines because I had flown to Russia, to Poland, to Hong Kong, to South Africa, to Canada, back over, all over the place. And it was a really great experience. But here's the interesting thing. I always loved travel, always, always, always. And I started to get really depressed and anxious during my travels. And I didn't know why. And that was even before I noticed the tremor. So it's interesting how things come back together, but I'm gonna give a quick little side story and then I'll wrap it up because it's tied to my passion. Because as I was working at Microsoft in 2020, I decided to make a shift. I was done flying around conferences, this, that. I want to stay closer to home. And I also felt like I could do more impact to people by being like a product manager or maybe marketing or some other position. So I started to put out feelers for positions. And around the same time, coincidentally, not even related, I would get this spam mail from this magazine. Sure, I'll give them a plug because they're fun. It's Touch of Modern is what it's called. And it's all these eclectic items like handheld flamethrowers and exotic whiskeys and just, I mean, you name it, like prints that you can hang of like pop art, and they had this thing for this device that you would hook up to your phone and you just set it down and your phone would walk you through it and you were taking pictures of the stars. And I'm like, that seems too good to be true, but I'm buying it. Only I researched and went somewhere else to get it, but that's a different story. So I got it, I took it out, and it was as promised. I took a picture of a galaxy and I went, whoa. And so I started using that and got into that. Around the same time, in the same week, I was offered the new role in Microsoft as a product manager, so owning a product now, not doing software development or advocacy. I was told our campus was closing because of the pandemic, so my role, which was traditionally a go into the office role, became a remote role. And that week I got my diagnosis for Parkinson's.
Wow.
And so that confluence of events, all those happening at the same time, I think were a catalyst for me to dive into astrophotography as a hobby, because the instant thought that I had was, wow, I may not be able to do this, like operate the equipment and work the keyboard and do these things. So I'm going to go all in. And so I went all in, and I seriously did not stage this for the call. I'm actually hiding my work monitor and my emails, but it's timed out anyway. But I just got some new prints too, and my office is a mess to put it on. But you know what? I take space pictures, but I don't take them to be, this is a snapshot of what this star looks like. I take it and I process it in a way, and I print it in a way that I feel tells the story of what I see with just one goal. When I look at that and say, wow, and think about it and contemplate it, I want someone else who maybe doesn't have a telescope or have the opportunity to go up in a SpaceX capsule. I don't, but I know some people might in the future, to evoke that same emotion. To me, it's the same thing as poetry. Can I present it in a way that draws your attention to that wow that I experienced so that I can share that with you? And that is all consuming. And last thing is rapinerol. Side effects of rapinerol, addiction, right? People get addicted to gambling. They get addicted to worse things than gambling. And so they're always asking, because I've been on rapinerol for years, and my wife goes with me to these visits, and they're like, Jeremy, if you notice any addictions or whatever. And my wife's like, well, you know, he's out every night staring at the stars and taking pictures, sometimes all night. And the doctor said, you know what, if that's what he got addicted to, I'm totally fine with that. We can keep him on the rapinerol. So
I'm always jealous. I'm not on an agonist, but I'm always jealous of the people that get the impulse control disorders that are like, now I run marathons, and now I, and I'm like, why can't I get that as a side effect instead of dyskinesia?
Why is it not, I'm just not healthy, my addiction. I was like,
So Chris, I mean, it's your turn now. I'm really curious what you would, because I've always kind of felt like you, like when people ask me, what do you do for fun? I'm like, I keep humans alive, like tiny humans. They're alive like every day. Like that's my thing. That's my jam. So what would you say? Like, sarcasm. That's my art form.
Like I've never really been one that's, you know, I never really considered myself like artistic, right, or musical per se. Growing up, I took piano lessons for, gosh, 7, 8 years, starting when I was, I think I started when I was 8. Can't play a lick, right? I can read sheet music, but I can do that. And it was weird because, like you were talking, Jeremy, about noticing different things along our life's journey that may or may not have been Parkinson's. I noticed whenever I was playing, you know, my teacher always got up, piano instructor always got onto me because I couldn't keep up with my left hand on the, you know, the bass side of it. It was the one-handed piano player is basically what I turned into. It was tough for me to do to keep the rhythm going simultaneously. Mm-hmm. Now, typing,
that's hard though.
Typing, I have no problems, you know, using both hands. Mm-hmm. But that was one of those little revelations I had, you know, a few months back.
I've never been able to juggle with both hands either, by the way. I can only do one hand, and that's only with one ball at a time, so.
Yeah,
right.
I can do
yeah.
two with one hand. That's about it.
And then,
not this one.
Gosh, probably 15 years ago, maybe, I was like, ooh, I want to buy a violin. I want to try doing that. This was before diagnosis. And again, left-handed, because all my symptoms are on the left side. Same. I always had trouble trying to get... Like at one point I thought, well, maybe I'll restring the violin and play it left-handed. Because I grew up with a guy that actually he's one of these people that can just like everything by ear musically, right? He can, you know, go to a thrift shop and spot a thing. Somebody's got a mandolin there and he'll pick it up playing it within 6 hours kind of thing.
Wow.
But he played... Wow. He learned, so his dad, I mean, well, he wasn't a violinist, he was a fiddler, because that's where we are here in Appalachia. But he learned to play mirroring his father. So he didn't restring anything. He just picked it up and played it left-handed, which I think was awesome, because, I mean, you know, because people would ask him, like, oh, can you teach me how to play? And he's like, you don't want to play like I do. Because it's not
textbook,
right? Like, well, not even textbook. It's how his brain processed it, right? Mm-hmm.
Not teachable.
Exactly. But like, you know, I think I do get some, I guess, creativity, artistic ability from mom. She's one of these people that can, if she can see, she can see something once and then recreate it in a sketch or whatever kind of thing.
Wow.
Like
But you still
she's,
can make stuff like that too, right? Like that's a creative outlet.
yeah, I mean, it is. I do think, yeah, I mean,
Did you
that's,
get croquembouche?
oh yeah, gosh, several years ago we made,
Ever seen a croquembouche? It's like a big thing of
yeah,
profiteroles. Like it's like a tree of profiteroles.
it's a tree
And
of
it's got.
profiteroles held together by
Is it
basically
honey
some,
or caramel?
it's kind of a, it's not really caramel, more so as it's like in between that and spun sugar. So you take it, you
I
dip it,
mean,
and you
either
chew
one
it.
sounds great, by the way.
Well, they were really, this one was good, right? So yeah, you make the pate de choux, and then you fill it. We did a chocolate and just a regular, cream vanilla, and then we built these. I'll have to find, I think I've got pictures of them somewhere.
This is blasé though, because when you
Okay,
make pate de choux,
we gotta
a pate
back up.
de choux.
Are you telling me you build pastry towers? Is that where we're at right
Yeah.
now? Am I hearing
Yeah,
you right?
but he's
Like,
not really
how was I
creative.
unaware of that?
It's
No,
not creative.
it
It's stacking blocks, people. I mean, come
It's
on.
like stacks of cream stuff towers.
He's being
Yeah,
modest
with braces.
because a pate de choux, when you
Yeah.
make pate de choux,
Yeah.
that's a cooked dough. So
Yeah.
it's really hard to, you have to put some, back into a pate de choux, and
Right.
then you have to pipe them out each one so that they puff in the middle, and then you have to fill them, and then you stack your blocks
I feel
and
like that's a
move
great character
it.
development scene in a movie. You've got the person like making this intricate baking thing, and they can talk to someone while they're doing it. And maybe
Well,
you could do that live on a show sometime, is how you do it.
here's the fun part.
Imagine you
So
have
we're
Parkinson's and you're like
making,
trying to
right?
stack things.
Yeah, we're making it, and I'm going through, and Angie. So of course, I break out my the Julia Child guide to her cookbook, and I'm going through it, and I think initially I said, okay, so I'm making this by hand first. Not, we've got this KitchenAid stand mixer, one of the big ones, right? Angie's like, why? I said, because Julia did it, and I'm going to do it because that's how I. So I did the first one. Turned out great. It was exhausting because, yeah, there's a lot of work there. The next ones, yeah, I use the mixer. But yeah, we make these, and then you make your sugar, and you spin it around it, and it creates like this crackable thing. So yeah, and then we take them to Christmas dinner. And we made, I can't remember if we made three or four.
Just four croquembouches.
I think it was
That's
just
easy.
three, actually. But like, we take them in to people, and everybody's like, what is this? And I was like, just eat it.
But I want to know if you guys have like, that's why I use the word obsessions. Like that's what I feel like with Parkinson's, but also
Right.
like especially when I was like peak meds, like honestly probably like over-medicated. And those periods where I was like over-medicated, it was like, oh, look at my balloons. I felt like I had to write poetry. I had to
Yes.
write. Like it was, and I'd always heard that about like professional writers, that like you can't really become a professional writer. It's when you have a story that you must tell. And then when my meds kind of, I don't want to say it got stabilized. I think honestly I'm intentionally under medicated right now. Because of the dyskinesia. So since I'm not reaching that, I'm like not having that impetus. Like I must go write poetry. I must make TikToks 5 times a day, kind of a thing that I had
Right.
before,
So I mean
I'm
the
still waiting for that part to kick in yet, but it's,
I don't think it always has to be like an obsessive compulsive, like
right? I
sometimes
mean,
you
I
just
would
compel
love to,
it.
yeah. Tagline there for the longest time, I was like, I wanted to be an author. I wanted to write. I wanted to write.
Me too.
And I never could get it, started. And everybody's like, just write. And I was like,
Yeah,
no,
right.
it's fine though.
What? What? And they're like, no, just write. And then, so.
Do you do the things the same way? Because I didn't write like this 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago.
So I noticed two things about it. I think I'm trying to take some ownership of it myself and not blame it on the drugs, but I do think I got passionate about doing things that I thought of doing before and hadn't been doing. So I'm like, I'm going to just do it. It's like, I've never considered myself to be artistic. And when people start saying, hey, you should print your art, you should do this and that, it was like, I resisted so long, but now I'm like, hey, you only like, I've got limited time, I'm going for it. But the thing that changed for me is I used to be a super multitasker. And I was known for being able to do a million things at once, and I would just get it done. And now I start something and my mind will not let me let go of it. I'm like a dog. So it's like, I just want to follow it through until it's done. And that means like if I'm, because it's a hobby of mine and I work during the day, it means I start something at night. And sometimes, you know, I might not get too much sleep because I'm just like, I'm not going to bed. I'm almost there. I'm almost there. And that's the big thing I've noticed as a result, which it's interesting. I'm learning ways to deal with it. But
do you think it also, though, has to do with kind of how your, I call it a sense of urgency that I have in my life now? Mm-hmm. I feel like more than I did before diagnosis. Do you feel like that? Does anybody else feel like that?
Like the sand in the hourglass kind of situation?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like if I'm gonna write, I better get it out now.
I don't think about that very often. I try not to think about that because I've convinced myself that I don't know anything. Like I like to say like I don't know shit about my life because when it comes down to it, I really don't. Like I'm not controlling. I'm not the only person at the wheel in my personal opinion. So when it comes down to it, like there's a Jewish proverb that says man plans, God laughs. And that's kind of how it is in my life. Like I make a plan and the universe is like, it's not going to work out that way, but sometimes it could be better. So for me, it's just more of like, I'm just compelled to, I have a thought in my head. Like take that thing I wrote about rocks and pebbles. I had every intention of writing about how we found a geode. And sometimes when you crack the geode, you never really know what's going to be inside. But instead I wrote this whole thing about something completely different. And when I got to the end and reread it, I cried at my own writing because I don't know consciously how that came out of my brain. I wasn't thinking. I was completely in a stream of consciousness. And when I reread it, I was like, oh, this is very moving. And I read it to my niece and my daughter, and my niece was like crying. She was like, oh my God, TT, how did you write that? I was like, I have no idea, dude. I have no idea. So it's weird. It's almost like a compulsion, and then it comes out, and I'm like, oh, okay, I got a little dump from the checking the box, and that's it. I finished my writing. Boop, I'm finished.
I've got to break that stream of consciousness because, as we spoke about, I work for a big company that sometimes pulls me into big meetings at inconvenient times, so I'm going to have to pop off. But I did want to say, Chris, I'm interested, like you were talking about music and your left hand, because my other hobby is a virtual reality. I love virtual reality games and I'm a Beat Saber fanatic. I've made it to Expert Plus. But when I started playing my left, oh, wow, that's interesting. I'm having a, right now. But my left hand would always be behind the right. But I kept playing and kept playing and kept playing. And now I can perfectly synchronize them. So I do feel like in my case, at least I was able to adapt, right? And I'm very interested if you've felt that's, like you've seen that or not.
That's Mel's favorite word, right?
Adapt.
Neuroplasticity.
Or Beat Saber. Oh, adapt. Okay, yeah. Sorry, I kind of threw a grenade. Now I'm gonna jump off.
I started Beat Saber recently, but I didn't follow you because I'm not ready to compete.
sure. Well, I mean, we can have just fun rounds too. Like I'll do them one-handed, like 360. Or no, I'm kidding.
Mario PN Beat Saber episode.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I'd sign up
so
for that.
Fun.
All right, y'all.
Did you ever? Because I learned how to play piano when I was younger. I taught myself. But did you? So I never picked up the melody part because I didn't have lessons. It didn't make sense to me. So it's, I was, you know, I was really relating to what you were saying because the melody, you know, I had the melody made sense, but the harmony didn't make sense. But I couldn't really do the harmony. My left hand didn't want to play. Now I can play the right hand notes with my left hand. I could play the left hand notes with my right hand, but I couldn't play with my right and left hand at the same time, and I still can't.
Interesting.
And I never took lessons. I'm just one of those weird people that can hear like tones and stuff like that.
And like, so I can't say, like, if you played a note, I can't say, ooh, that's A sharp or B flat, right? Because
you know it's not right.
Because if you mess it up, we're all going to be flat.
Right. But if you play, do you hear it? Do you hear the, you know, if you try to play something like my daughter can play, Alexis can play,
like I know what the notes are supposed to sound like, and if I'm listening to something and it's
you hear tone.
Right. I can't name it, but I can distinguish whether it's like in key or on key or whatever.
Right. That's what I meant to say. Yeah. Cause Alexis could like, she learned how to like through tone, she learned how to play Black Parade, which obviously since I've learned My Chemical Romance 1,000 times on my videos, people probably know that I love My Chemical Romance, but Alexis can play Black Parade and she learned how to play it.
Nice. It's just,
but fun. She'll know like, so, but if she wants, I couldn't teach her because I didn't know the notes. So I just like, I would just hum it for her. I'd be like, when I was naked, and I'm like, you have to go up. And here's me trying to teach her. You have to go up. You have to go up. You know, like I'm singing it. When I was, I'm like, it's was, it's not was. I'm like, you're down here. Was. I sound like one of those like middle school music teachers. That's good because you hear tone. You know, that you're more creative than you think you are. Like we all are.
I don't know. I mean, I don't guess I've ever really defined a creative outlet kind of thing. I mean, honestly, if there was one, like, I guess like hands-on hobby or whatever, do it would be just fixing things, right? I like tinkering. I like taking things apart and putting them back together. And I've discovered that I can still do that. It just takes a lot longer now kind of thing, but it's,
but mechanics of it in your head, right? You don't need like an instructional, kind of just makes sense.
I mean, sometimes I do just make sure I'm not going to screw something up. Like as the thing you're taking apart increases in value. I'll look at the manual sometimes. But it is like, I always wanted to write. I used to journal like crazy and I, that just kind of, you know, flew by the wayside. I'm finding now that like to physically write, like it's not, I don't have like micrographia, but it's like, it's a struggle to make my hand write words.
Plus the posture of writing is sometimes very uncomfortable when you have dystonia in through your shoulders and stuff, just the act of writing.
I used to do calligraphy.
I'm very, my knees are screwed when I'm trying to write, you know, I'm like, you know, Tiny Tim will not get any food this year. Like, it just doesn't work.
I've got a, Angie bought me, gosh, years ago, this really nice calligraphy set. And I use that. I can still, I'm out of practice, but I still remember like how to do it kind of thing. I did toy with photography for a while. I mean, I've got somewhere in a box over there. I've got, you know, some lenses, tripods and all kinds of stuff. I don't know. It's just like I've never seen myself as creative.
That is creative. I think everyone has some kind of creative. Well, you wanted to go through you said you wanted to go through the pages of Julia Child's cookbook too and recreate every recipe. Like that's a big undertaking.
Right. And I mean,
I think it would be cool. It's like a, you know, it's like a bucket list kind of thing.
Right.
My bucket list was like stay alive. You know, like I'm just,
here. Probably. Two months before Angie and I started dating, like I was planning this big New Year's Eve dinner, right, for friends. And the recipe that I had was lamb you can eat with a spoon, right?
Interesting.
So it's basically, you know, you get a 5-pound
leg. Space, like.
Right. So you get this 5-pound leg of lamb, you roast it all day with.
He's lying, it was actually Jell-O.
like, turnips and carrots and all kinds of stuff, and 2 bottles of Chianti.
I was
Smells.
literally just going to say, do you eat it with fava beans and a nice glass of
I did
Chianti?
make fava beans. In there. So like I did that, I did some type of shrimp appetizer, and I think I made blueberry creme brulee, just plain regular, yeah, right. And
That's my bag.
that's the Silence of the Lambs reference I've been waiting for.
but yeah, it was a,
That
and she was like helping me because I mean she essentially stalked me
sous
to
chef,
make me.
sous chef. How long have you guys been married?
This last year was 20 years, so this
Oh, so
year
yeah.
May will be, yeah. I mean, we dated
Yeah.
4 years before that kind of thing.
Esther, how long have you guys been married?
Yeah, like 20 years. Last year was
Wow.
20.
That's awesome.
But that reminds me though, like I'm exercising a lot now and stuff, and it's helping me a lot. But people used to say that motion is lotion. Like I hear people in the Parkinson's community say that, and every time, like I never heard that before. And when I hear it, I always think of Silence of the Lambs. Like it just like
Yeah.
grosses me out when people, it's like motion is
Motion.
Let skin or
put
else
that
it gets you.
in the basket, or else the kid, or
My
what was
sister
it?
and I
Lush
have
you with your hose again. I'm like, don't say
I read all the books
that.
in high school, so my sister and I have a love of like Thomas Harris
Yeah.
quotes. We share like Buffalo Bill memes on Valentine's Day. So she bought me that makeup bag and then a shirt that said, Buffalo Bill's lotion company, and it has the butterfly on it, and
Oh, that's.
it's hysterical. But that's like our whole thing, and like we're known to just look at each other and be like, "Well, Clarice, are the lambs still bleeding?" It's like it's just so, it's so
Right, I gotta move.
insane.
I gotta eat. I haven't eaten today except these. That's why I
Oh,
was like eating these. Mel,
we
though,
did
seriously,
swings
you
and
have.
chicken
Did you
breast.
see the post I made today? You have to talk about what's happening with your GI stuff. I am dying over here. Like it's horrible. I can't be the only one. We can't, like
I didn't get to
I
watch the
ate.
whole thing. Is
Huh?
it food interfere? Is I didn't get to watch the whole thing because we were in the car and it kept like shutting off.
Dude,
Are you
all
having
my
digestion?
as long as I can remember, I thought I had reflux. And I mean, that runs in my family. We have like family GI
Yeah.
problems. That's what unites the
Yeah.
family is GI problems. Not
Yeah.
communication or love, just GI problems.
Yeah, we have
And
GI problems.
so I took like Prilosec and stuff like that, and I always watched what I ate. Like I couldn't eat too much chocolate or eat too late at night or eat things that were too acidic or whatever, because I but right like probably when my Parkinson's symptoms started, like I started waking up, or it was with like heartburn, like really bad regurgitated heartburn, and I had it when really bad when I was pregnant.
Me
And it
too.
had kind of resolved itself after pregnancy, but then it creeped back up when my Parkinson's stuff happened. And so I started like sleeping upright, and being really careful about it. But it's like I eat and it just feels like stuff just sits here and then sits here and then sits here. And then it's like, okay, yesterday was a perfect example. I ate because I don't eat in the morning. I go to the gym. I come back, let's say it's like 11. I ate lunch at 11:30. That was the first meal of the day. I had one taco. That's it. Okay. One taco, nothing else. I was burping up that taco at 6 o'clock at night.
That's probably delayed gastric emptying, because that's very similar to what I was going through in the beginning. And that's kind of how it started for me, was a lot of reflux, and I felt like it was almost cold right here because it was always sitting kind of like near
Stuck
my
the
esophagus.
peristaltic motion's not pushing your
Yeah.
food down it's
And
supposed
that's
to.
what I put in
Plus
that, that's what I put in that
like this
video.
posture. It's like this thing when you're not, your food's not getting up or down the way that it should. So it's like, it's weird.
But I if I don't eat, I get psycho, dude. Like, I'm a bitch.
Yeah.
If I don't eat, and I snap at my kids, I snap at, and everybody knows I'm like the queen of hangry. So I
Bless
force myself to eat. But
you.
then again, it's like I feel like I'm just piling stuff on stuff. It's like there's a trap food traffic jam inside me. And same thing last night. I woke up at like 4 with that reflux chest pain again, but I have to eat. I mean, I can't not eat, but
Like a
what the hell?
bubble, like
It
it doesn't
feels
feel like
like
there's like a bubble rolling through your.
this is the first thing that I've eaten today, and I started eating them before the call, and I just feel like it just sits right
It
there.
hurts.
Just
Yeah.
stuck.
You need a little like
Yeah.
next to you or like something like that, you know?
You think
They
so?
gave me clonidine, which I don't know what the brand name is of that when I went to the gastro.
Clonidine.
Yeah, and they said that the famotidine or omeprazole would
Oh,
resolve
famotidine.
it.
Yeah. But this is the thing. So you're not supposed to take that. Like, I've taken all of them over the years, but you're not supposed to stay on them. They have other problems. You know, they increase your risk for stomach cancer. Like, that was, it's, I
So I
don't,
only take them
you know.
situationally. I don't take them every day because I can't. I just can't
You're
warrant it.
stuck. I
Any pill
hear
that I can
it.
avoid taking, if I don't have to take it after, since I've been diagnosed, I'm not interested in taking it unless I have to take it.
But you know what somebody told me? I have a friend in Germany, and he had done a lot of research, and he was saying, has anybody tried like a liquid diet? What if we didn't eat solids?
It didn't work for me because it was also my problem is double-sided. It's the digestion, the slow digestion, but it's also protein and fat interference. So not only do I have to be careful of when I eat and how much I eat, like I sat the other day and ate 12. I'll tell you exactly how many, 12 tortilla chips with guacamole, homemade guacamole, not even garbage stuff, because I won't eat that. And I don't like it but unless I make it myself. And 10 minutes, maybe we were sitting there, and in 10 minutes, I was halfway through my dose. My dose usually lasts about 4 hours. I was at the 2 hour mark. I ate, maybe this much guac, and it shut me off. I was fine, I was totally fine, and then I went from that to this in 10 minutes. It's bizarre, it's just bizarre. But gastric emptying is, I think, they say that 70% of Parkinson's patients suffer from some type of gastric emptying delay or the gastric emptying issues.
I mean, it makes sense, right? I mean, it's slowing everything in our body, everything else down in our body. You're muted yourself. You muted yourself.
Twitchy hand. I was on the autoimmune protocol. I wanted to be on the walls protocol, but I could not get myself to eat like kimchi and all the like the probiotic foods, and I couldn't get myself to eat the organ meats. She does a lot of organ
Yeah, I
meats.
couldn't do that. I almost died on
Couldn't
that
do it.
food.
She went off. She was on doing a vegan. She was vegan, and she went from
Was?
veganism. Dr. Walls. Did you ever
Oh,
read the Walls protocol? It's pretty much
yeah. That's what I'm
based.
saying. I did it. I did it one weekend, and I was so sick, I couldn't get off the floor. My body
It's
like
hard.
rejected
It's
that.
very hard. And you get like the, because you have to stop eating. So I did the autoimmune protocol, and I was lucky enough, of all people, I was on Instagram, and I saw Jenna Jameson was talking about going keto and going off carbs and how it throws you in almost to a, like a flu-like situation where you get all these flu-like symptoms from going off carbs. So I knew to do it a little bit slower than they recommend. So I managed to avoid that. Thanks, Jenna Jameson. But so I felt better on the autoimmune protocol before I got, this was right before I got diagnosed. I felt better on the autoimmune protocol than I ever did. Like, but
Okay.
it's so hard to get back on and start re-eliminating those foods. And, but I mean, and even right now, I don't know that I should because I can't eat raw vegetables because I know if I have a salad, it's with me all day. I will feel full. I'm like a weirdo. I don't like breakfast foods. So I'll eat a salad at like 10 o'clock in the morning. And that salad will be with me until like 4 or 5, 6 o'clock. If it's a big salad, it's with me all day. Vegetables don't digest, not raw. Raw fruit, nope.
I mean, like you, the worst. I mean, I had that experience one day too. I was like, oh, I'll just eat a salad. That's good. Not a lot of protein. I put a little cheese and stuff like that. Like you said, all friggin'
like
day.
the worst. And forget about it. If you eat like a burger, or I made like a black bean and corn stew. I was like, all right, maybe plant proteins. Ooh, that was 16 hours of off time. Like 16 hours. Like what, I didn't go to sleep till 4 in the morning. I think I was on the phone with Jason. I was on the phone with Jason until 4 in the morning. He's like, I can't sleep. I took too much mushrooms, and I'm like, I can't sleep because I took too much food.
I'm sorry, but yeah, like I only got like 4 hours of sleep last night, not because of Parkinson's stuff, but because of Parkinson's stuff, because of the stomach stuff, you know? And it was just, and so worse. All right, I gotta go, I don't know, eat some
Enjoy
like
lunch.
apple juice or
I'm gonna run too. Half
something.
an hour before I gotta go pick up children.
This is Young Onset Parkinson's Network. We believe young onset Parkinson's disease does not define you. You define it. We are a safe place to learn, connect, and engage within a supportive community that actually gets it, because we've got it too. Through programs, resources, and special events, we'll provide the help you and your care partner need to live your best life and thrive far beyond diagnosis. Welcome to Young Onset Parkinson's Network. Living well starts here.